Hey there, welcome to Beauty at Work. We're in between seasons at the moment, so here's a clip from one of our earlier episodes. What does it mean to talk about beauty in psychiatry? In this clip, Dr. Eloise Ballou, a Canadian psychiatrist with a special interest in integrating humanities into her work, shares how a key aesthetic principle of claritas, in this case applied to the clarity of seeing a person as they are, drives her work as a psychiatrist. Here's what she had to say.
I'm unusual, I would say, because I do a little bit of everything. So I do very acute care. So people who are coming into the hospital, they are suicidal or psychotic or deeply depressed or bipolar with the manic episode. So people who have very prominent mental health symptoms and they're in crisis. And so I will see them and assess them and determine whether they're safe to go home to have some outpatient services or if they have to come into hospital, sometimes against their will. So again, it can be quite intense in that way, and then provide care for them in the hospital over the course of their stay. So that's like one piece of what I do. Another piece is psychotherapy. And so I do this kind of talk therapy work with young adults or people of all ages. I've trained for all ages. And then I supervise residents as well who do this kind of work. And so it's kind of a meta, you know, a therapist for the therapist, if you will, and helping to teach and guide them in that process. So that's another component. And then I do a little bit of outpatient work as well. So prescribing medications I always do a little bit of that kind of supportive work. You know, I put those into categories, but if I see a patient and they look sad, I'm not just going to say, you know, let's up your antidepressant, right? I'm going to go try to understand what else is going on in their life. And so it's again, to that left brain, right brain sort of science and art, you can't just follow an algorithm to do this well. You really have to be intuitive and understand the scientific underpinnings of what's going on, but also try to dig in to what else might be playing a role.
Would you say your training as an artist or an art historian has influenced then your practice of psychiatry?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, one of my own interests in what I did some teaching in as well is faces. And so I am fascinated by portraiture and faces. And a big part of what I do as a psychiatrist is very closely watch my patient's face. And I have to also be aware of my own face because, for example, a patient who's very manic, very irritable and touchy, you know, they will call me out if my face looks a little bit annoyed or a bit surprised, and they will either, you know, kindly or not so kindly, you know, tease me about that. And it can be very problematic as well. So I have to be aware of my own face, and I have to be aware of very subtle cues and subtle shifts in the face of my patient. And so an interest that I've had is using portraits, photos or paintings to teach medical students and residents to pay closer attention to what are these cues and what are you seeing in a face. And when you're looking at a face, how much of that is actually in that face versus how much are you bringing with your own, again, your biases or your own, how you're feeling that day or your background or all these things, how much of that is laying on to what you're seeing in that face. And I think that this is where the arts and narrative medicine, which is this whole area of using the arts to improve medical care, I think it's a really powerful tool.
Wow, thank you. That's really, yeah, I mean, I think it's really vital. Tell me about, I want to ask you a couple of questions about beauty. And again, I think you've touched on this a little bit in your previous example of the father and the daughter, but what is an example of beauty that you encounter in your work? And maybe there, if there's another story that comes to mind that you would consider, this is what makes this work beautiful.
Sure. So it's interesting because we think of beauty in maybe more simplistic terms, right? Symmetry or aesthetics or, you know, a beautiful sunset. And granted, those things are absolutely beautiful. But what I think in my patient work and what I find really striking in its beauty, I would say it's often in my work in the emergency room. And so an example would be, I often get patients who come in who have psychosis, often related to substance use. So they use things like methamphetamines or cocaine or really hard drugs that make them lose touch with reality. And they can become very aggressive, very paranoid, or very fearful. And so they when I see them again for the first time, they present in this very striking way, in a way sometimes I'm afraid for my safety or they are afraid of me, let's say if they're very paranoid. And again, back to the smudging, it's very clouded. Like I don't get a sense of who they are. I don't feel like I know them as a person. But because it's a safety concern, you know, we admit them to hospital. We keep them, often they'll agree to take some medications or the substances just wear off naturally. And then within a day or two, it's like the clouds clear and I get to see who this person really is. And suddenly it's like I am meeting them for the first time. And I often tell them this. And I say, I know we've met a couple times now, but I feel like I'm really meeting you for the first time today. And they agree. And they feel that suddenly we are two people who are, again, together in this space, as opposed to before I'm there, but I can't get a grasp of this other person. They're obscured by this mental illness. And in this case, luckily, a more temporary experience of that losing touch with reality. So to me, that I love it when I see it, because it's also a sign of improvement. It means the person's getting better, and usually within a day or two they're totally back to normal and they're back to their life, which is so hard to believe when you see them at first. You would not guess that it can flip. It doesn't always flip, but in this case, when it does flip so quickly, it makes me feel so hopeful. But also I feel, again, I get to meet this person and I get to see them as they are. And that, to me, the beauty is the humanity, is that true, unvarnished or not obscure, just like the clarity of the sun, right? You see that light, and that is the most beautiful thing about what I do. And I actually get to see it quite often. Especially in these cases where it feels, again, you would feel easily, disappointed or scared in those moments, but you have to find that humanity where you can, and that's where I see it.
Wow. So would you say it's the beauty is in discovering their hidden humanity or something like that, or what is hidden that's being revealed?
Yeah, I would say it's just who they are. I would say that. When people have severe mental illness, they tend to be pretty homogenous, meaning they're not, you can't really tell the distinguishing characteristics that make them who they are. It's sort of like a stick figure, you know, it's a sketch of a person. And that, unfortunately, is one of the symptoms of mental illness, is that even just the expressions are often more muted or just more stereotypical. Like if someone's very afraid, they're just going to look afraid all the time. And that's, you don't see that peeking out of the personhood. And so to me, that beauty, the beauty is just in the person. And I think of children, for example, and there's an idea, which I agree with, that most, all children actually are beautiful, are striking in their beauty. And in that energy and that being in their presence, and why would that be? And I think part of it is because kids don't put on this act, right? They don't put on this polite show for how, and they're not trying to read you for how they're supposed to say or what they're supposed to say, how they're supposed to act. They just kind of are. And to me, the most beautiful thing about people is when they just are however they are. And sometimes that means they might be angry, right? Or they might be sad. And people apologize when they cry or when they get angry. And I'm grateful that they are showing me exactly how they're feeling, and they're trusting me with their truest self. And that is the beauty for me.
Wow. Yeah, I can relate to it. My mom's been living with schizophrenia for some 35, 36 years. And you know, she was unmedicated for a number of years. And so there are very rare moments where, you know, she's functional for about 4 or 5 hours a day. And there are these occasional moments when we see the person behind the appearance there are times where she asks questions that, you know, are like, oh, wow, that's an original, that's her, like coming right through. And those are incredibly beautiful moments. And
and you catch them, right? It's hard, because I can imagine it's hard to notice and pay attention to those moments when it's many more moments are not like that.
Yeah, exactly. There is a theme that we've been exploring with scientists along these lines, just in terms of understanding beauty as that hidden order or inner logic or something like that that's being revealed, right? So you get an insight into this is how things are. So beyond the beauty of pretty things or patterns and symmetries and so on that you'd mentioned, and it's really fascinating to see that connection. Even in psychiatry, just like in physics or biology, you do see this kind of insight into kind of the workings of reality. But in this case, you're what is being revealed to you, as it were, is a person, not just an atom or the mechanism, but the humanity of a person, it seems, no?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you wrote about the idea around Thomas Aquinas and his theories around beauty, where he mentions clarity and that again, the clarity of the person and the coherence of the parts of who they are and how they fit and the balance and symmetry of the unique way. It's like a snowflake, right? Like they are unique and yet universal. And that, again, it's all these paradoxes. And so I agree with you that it's why would that hold together even when we talk about a person, but it does. And you recognize it when you see it and you recognize the absence of that when people are unwell. And when I see a patient and I'm wondering, how concerned should I be? Do they need treatment? I try to seek out, am I seeing that clarity and that coherence and that balance in that person? Or is it confused? Is it muddied? And if it's muddied, that makes me worried. And that justifies in my mind, well, we have to keep looking. We have to do more treatment because they're not there yet. That crystallization, that clarity is not there yet. And then when it's there, I recognize that the patient recognizes it. And that's how we know we're on the right track. So it's almost like a cue. Not that it's ever taught this way, to be clear, but that's why I think the beauty, this idea of looking at it as beauty, as almost a therapeutic marker and indicator, I think is extremely valuable.
Wow. So let's talk about obstacles to beauty then. Are there challenges to encountering this beauty in your work?
Yes, for sure. The biggest one is probably the nature of healthcare. I mean, I work in Canada, but I think it's the same everywhere. That there are pressures around time and money and all the things that make it hard to stop and be present. Because I think that noticing beauty requires a mindful kind of state where you're not trying to do something. You're not trying to solve a problem. You have to just pause and be with this person in this space. And you have to have in the back of your mind, of course, there's a goal, right? You're not going to sit there endlessly with no outcome in mind, but you have to hold that goal very lightly and be present and just kind of see what emerges. And I think the challenge is that everything conspires against that. Everything aligns to make us rush and focus on checklists and focus on the highest acuity risk. And if that's not met, then move on and let them, languish to who knows what other mental health services they might have, which is often none, right? So I would say that I can get into that mind space where I want to, I know there's 10 other people waiting to see me. And so more time here means less time for them, or they're going to wait longer. And how do I balance the idea of being present while being efficient, while providing the care, even in the interaction, that it should be therapeutic to sit with me and be with me, even if I don't prescribe any medications, if nothing is different at the outcome, just being with me, I would hope, would have some positive effect. And I think when I'm at my, in my best state of mind and in the right situation, I think that can happen. And so that's what I have to keep coming back to is to slow down and remember that there can be an impact in just being with the person, with my humanity and their humanity in that moment.
And so talk about then what it might look like to, I don't want to say infuse beauty into the healthcare field, but it maybe even in your, training your residents or even in hospitals or I guess, or even for scientists more generally, like what do you think it would take, or what would it look like to cultivate the conditions for this beauty to emerge, or this attentiveness to beauty to emerge?
I think the biggest thing is to actually talk about it openly And before I came across your work, I had never really thought about beauty in my work, especially as a psychiatrist, especially in the, as a, you know, as you do the work with the scientists. So I think that there's this bias of like beauty or brains, right? Either you focus on the aesthetics and then you're an artist, or you focus on logical science and then you're, you know, rational scientist or a physician. And so I think that that saying and being very overt about it, it's not a dirty word to say that looking for beauty in your work is necessary. And I actually think, to the point about burnout with physicians in particular, the stressors I was mentioning earlier, the time pressure and feeling that I'm sort of unable to make everyone happy and inevitably gonna have to cut corners that I wish I didn't have to. I think that by valuing in myself that I need moments of beauty in my work to continue to do this work, right? And to teach that to my trainees as well, that if you are in an environment, either in your personal life or in your professional life, that you can't see that beauty and you can't stop and make space for it, then something has to change. And whether that means you getting your own, you know, taking some time off, getting therapy. I mean, I myself have been in therapy for many years, and I think for most physicians and most people, if they're open to it, I think it would help them. So to work on your own inner life. But then to tell clinicians and scientists that yes, beauty is important. You're not wrong. You don't have to hide it. You don't have to feel sheepish about it. Like, this is as important as the science that you do, is recognizing that you need beauty and you need meaning, and that they are not mutually exclusive.
Beauty at Work is brought to you by Templeton Religion Trust. If you enjoyed this clip, go check out the full episode. And please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a review. It really helps get the word out about the show. Thanks, and see you next time.